This is HPR episode 1981 entitled HPR Community News for February 2016 and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 87 minutes long. The summary is HPR Community News for February 2016.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and you're listening to Hacker Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a community podcast network, which means that, like in Barcamp, there are no fixed agendas and there are no fixed speakers. Anybody is more than welcome to step up to the plate, record a show and submit it to Hacker Public Radio. To bring everybody up to speed about what's going on the mail list, rundown of the previous shows, welcoming new hosts, we have once a month a HPR community news show, which is open to any member of the HPR community, both active participants who submit shows and people who listen, to come along and join and talk, shoot the breeze, so to speak. Joining me tonight, shooting the aforementioned breeze, is Mr. Dave Morris. How are you, Dave?
Hi, Ken. I'm great, thanks. How are you?
I am fine. Thank you very much. Made all the better by the addition of three new members to our community of hosters, as in people who have submitted shows. Would you like to introduce them? Although I probably would manage not to butcher them this month.
Okay, I'll do my traditional role, as it seems to be.
Anyway. I'll watch them later on.
Nacho Jordi is the first one, which is a good name. I like that. John Doe.
I wonder, is that his real name or his handle? Either way, cool name. Props to his mom if it is a real name.
Yeah, cool. John Doe, as I said, who's a name, it's a name I've come across before. I can't remember where.
It's the American Joe Blogs. It's the American version of Joe Blogs. If somebody doesn't have a name, they get introduced.
I was being facetious.
That could be his real name, you know. That would be really
entirely possible.
A massive amount of trouble if he ever does get hit by a bus.
And the speech synthesis has terrible trouble with the third host, whose handle is Mirror Shades, I think. But yes. It's in Leet speak, or however you'd
as
say
it. As it should be. I was surprised you didn't do put that into your said expression to turn stuff into Leet speak. That might be one good example.
You've been looking at my notes, haven't you?
I have indeed, and I have a few comments about your notes, David.
Okay.
Anyways, can you hear me still?
Yes.
So the first show of last month was the HPR Community News, which we recorded. The audio quality was absolutely terrible. But yes, I don't know what it was. Just all my recordings last month were just terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible.
Well, we were expecting a lot of a Zoom recorder, I think, weren't we? Trying to get like three people at different places around one of those guys. And they're a bit directional, are they? Are they not? Is that not what it is?
Well, I just think I didn't set it up properly. And what really killed it was that small mini fridge thing. It was just at the same height and it was going throughout. But anyway, it is what it is. Any recording is better than no recording. One of our many mottos here in HPR.
Indeed.
There is a comment on that, which Mike Ray says, XML Starlet, yes please. Ken, there are lots of folks here who would be interested in hearing about XML Starlet. Anything else you can share about XML, various He's used various expat parsers and various programming languages toolkits for ages, never got the grips with DOMS type parsers, and I'm continually annoyed that expat isn't a validating parser. Anything you can tell me about other ways to work with XML would be cool. I think XML is a great thing. Put in a box markdown, one of the important things to happen online publishing, data exchange for decades. It's okay, I can't compare markdown with the huge importance of XML, but I think anything that's flexible that is based on pure text was great. Okay.
I quite agree with him about XML Starlet. Yes, so you've got my vote.
Yeah, I've started a text file in my HPR shows directory about it. That is not a promise to anybody, but it is where do you start? And you have to go back. Well, if somebody's talking about XML Starlet, you need to know XPath. If you need to know XPath, need to know about how different types of parsers work. And if you need to know how different types of parsers work, you need to know about how XML is written. And if you need to talk about XML, you need to go back and write, say, describe how XML is and what's the difference between XML and Markdown. And so, yes, I'm starting, but it's going to be a long journey.
Yes, I do know. I feel your pain because I started on a Vim thing, if you recall, and I've got really bogged down in that one. Really have to get back to it, but boy, is it you don't realize what you're taking on necessarily.
And the problem with this is that I'm not necessarily a big fan of XML, although you work with anything long enough, you do begin to see it. And I really, as you know, Dave, I approach a problem from I will fix the problem and then I will walk away from the problem. And I just realized how little XML I actually know after all this time. But anyway.
Yeah, I sympathize.
But on the other hand, I should say to myself, as I would to anybody else, is basically try and do as much as you can. And if there are bits you don't know, just put the shout out, for if people know more about this particular topic, they should do a show about it, and that way we can add it to a series.
Indeed, yes. Make a start at least.
Exactly. Any show, if it ain't on the server, it ain't a show. There you go. Another motto. Whoa, yes. Okay, the next day we had FOSDEM, K-Building, Level 1, Group B and C, which is CAcert, DRLM, Gluster, OpenVert, OpenVZ, Free Software Foundation, ReactOS, BerryOS, Debian, PostSQL, OpenMandriva, Mangeo, and Gen2. All interviews.
Indeed. What does one say? It's a magnum opus, this one, on your part, and some fascinating stuff. I just picked out the ones that really interested me, but I can comment on Postgres sounded great, and Owen Mandriva, Magia, and Gentoo sounded fascinating, but I shouldn't, be selective. It was a great series of interviews.
Again, it's with these, I don't really take any credit other than the fact that, it's a lot of work to do it, and it's a lot of work to edit it, mostly, getting the information for the links. This is one of the shows where I try to push out the boat on show notes, so that people can jump to a particular section and play, when they press the interview, they play their own interview rather than having to listen through whole go of stuff or skip forward to a particular period of time. And it's important also to get the Twitter handles and all that stuff in. But again, the whole thing was, these are the people who are at FOSDEM. It is just really easy. You just say hi and blah, tell me about the project.
Yes, it's still a lot of work, though. I've seen you struggling through the day.
There was the first day we had we won't stop on each of these, but the first day we had we were 2 days, and then the first day we had, I was there after the opening speech. Well, I did the BST interview first, which came out as last, but Leonard Pottering one talk I went to, which turned out to be a bit of a disappointment, I thought myself.
Yes, and other people said the same, I think.
And so then from then the whole way through the day, I didn't even go to the restroom or have water or a sandwich or anything. Thankfully, the following day, you made sure I had food. So that was excellent.
I had no idea that you were so desperately in need of a sandwich or something the first day. I apologize for not even asking.
No, not a worry. But I really wanted to get everyone, and I was trying to keep it short. But you know, when you've got interesting people, what can you do except ask them there's a certain amount of questions that you have to ask. They're interesting people, and you have to do justice to the project. So you gotta, you're sitting there, and I'm thinking of the people who are listening to this, and you have to ask the questions that they would be asking, and then it's as long as it's going to be. But surprisingly, there was only about 2 hours that wasn't, downtime, where I was collecting their names and stuff, going from booth to booth. So in all that, it was pretty high efficiency recording to walking around.
Cool. Yeah.
Pretty nice. And I then, of course, I come home and I realized that there was a whole other section, because they had two sections in the K building, the ground floor and the top floor, and then the AW building. And then in the H building, last year there was only a book, the O'Reilly book, so I thought, I won't bother going over there. And then I was coming home and was realizing, hey, there's a whole group of missing people here. And then there was one guy with the 3D printed laptops. And he came up with his own specification. I had a half an hour interview of him. I cannot find it. I can't find anywhere. I have two recorders and two backup Sansas and the H2, and I cannot find the recording. And
that's a real shame.
And also then with the other interview, then we had with RMS from the night before, it's all I can see, an hour and a half of it there, but only 45 minutes come out in the feed. But we can talk about that later. Shall we go through some of the comments?
Yes, indeed. So, I'll start this time. On 1957, which we were just talking about, Mike Ray congratulates you, saying, great job, Ken. And a mixed bag of responses from those distros you asked about. What's A111?
I think it's a shorthand for accessibility.
I knew what he meant, but I'd never come across that way of expressing it.
Neither did I.
No, the most. Shall I read this all out? It's quite long.
You can summarize.
Yeah, he's basically saying that people are still not fully recognizing the issue of accessibility and sort of being a little bit embarrassed about being asked about it. I think, he's making the point that it's. Be a good idea to get people to try and use these things wearing a blindfold.
Yeah,
that's an excellent point.
That was an idea that I proffered, but I really I did want to bring up accessibility with all the tables, make sure that it's something that's discussed. But from their point of view, you're a developer and you're working on your one particular thing, and from your point of view, perhaps you do spend a lot of time on accessibility, or perhaps you do spend a lot of time on visual thinking. Perhaps you spend a lot of time working on whatever. So I think there's a gap there, and I'm going to have a good serious think about that between now and next year, about how we can most productively bring the message across, because There are, as I said in the thing, there's lots of people. Nobody is anti-accessibility. It's just, I think perhaps we need to get the message out clearer, and we need to bring, something like the freedesktop.org. We should have openaccessibility.org or something that is not focused on building a distro. And it's not focused on this, that, and the next thing. It's just a way to help people communicate and to put people in touch with. You want to log an accessibility, but you're running a bug. You come into a bug with accessibility. Is it a KDE 1? Is it a Fedora 1? Is it an Ubuntu? Which is the right place to put that bug in? That would be handy.
Yeah, it's a sort of awareness raising process, isn't it? That people will, if it's pointed out to them, say, "Oh yeah, well, we haven't really catered for that," but it should be something that's in their minds much earlier on in the chain, isn't it?
Yeah, there's that, but there's also from the developer's point of view, there are presentations out there already given at FOSDEM last year about accessibility and how you can check accessibility in your application. So that's technically covered, but I think what would be beneficial is how can you as a sighted person or as a non-impaired person help with accessibility? Thing number one is I turned on accessibility in KDE 5 because Jonathan Dell says, yeah, you just go and you click it on and it's accessible. And yes, I did that. I turned it on and it becomes accessible. And what you hear is frame, text, nothing else. That's on the screen. Okay, now I know I have a bug. And I know the developer who wrote that hadn't read the presentation that another developer gave at FOSDEM 2 years ago saying, okay, here's how. Here's how you don't call anything text. You have to say this is the password box rather than text box one. This is the username box rather than text box one. This is the password box rather than password box two. And you have to take into account the flow that the screen reader is going to go like if it's a table. So rather than going rather than going percentage 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, then, I don't know, football score, Arsenal, Liverpool, rather than going Liverpool 1, 1, 1, 4, 4, 4, 2, 4, depending on the order in which you read the table, it makes no sense or it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. It's like tab order and that sort of thing.
Exactly. So yeah. That stuff is there, but making developers aware that stuff is there, that's a job for somebody. And now somebody making us aware of regular sighted people that you can help accessibility. In fact, you're the people who should be helping with accessibility, because for a blind person and they hear tab, they don't see that there are four other boxes on the screen that don't have anything filled in because they can't see them. So you need to be the one filing the bugs, but you've never done anything with accessibility before. So who do you call? Where do you go? Well, you go to somebody and you log a bug, and you get the regular old problem with free and open source software. Where is it? Is it downstream or upstream, or which project is supposed to be looking at it? Do you file it under accessibility in Debian? The process for filing accessibility bugs is this. In Fedora, the process for filing accessibility bugs is that. So it would be handy for people. To come up with a website or something, you have found a problem with accessibility. Click here. What is it? It's in Fedora. Click. It's in KDE. Click. It's here in this. It's in this application. Click, click, click. This is where you need to report the bug. This is the contact person that you need to talk to about it. Anyway, that was just kind of where I am now at the minute in thinking about this.
Yeah.
Okay, Mike had another comment, fair comment, basically about, basically what I said at length there. And he's wondering about whether the React OS guys are going to get around to reverse engineering the Windows accessibility stack, which would be an interesting one to do, actually.
Indeed.
Okay, sorry for boring you to that there, Dave. We'll move on to the next one, which is Fedora OpenSUSE Lumos Illumenos. I have to say that right because I was brought up on putting a H or something in there. Own Cloud, Enlightenment, Tizen, Colab, KDE, and LibreOffice.
Some cool stuff here, actually, yeah. It's... Yeah, I've lost my place here. Open Cloud was... I chatted to the Open Cloud man, and they're very pushy. Have you tried it yet? Yeah, the answer is no. But and Colab looked amazing too. That was good, and I really enjoyed your discussion with Aaron Saigo. That was the highlight of this one for me.
I was actually pretty impressed with, you know, obviously Red Hat talking again to Fedora and their team. They're really are very professional type of organization. They had a good answers to the accessibility questions. I was impressed with Sarah from the OpenSUSE Foundation. And I think a lot of people, you know, there was a lot of discussions about getting more of the female hackers out and about. And I think a lot of people made an awful lot of effort to get their, there seemed to be a lot more female hackers around this year. People probably made a concerted effort to encourage their female hackers to come out and make sure that they were giving a positive view that, you know, there are all walks of life in this particular project and get involved. Is that something you noticed as well? More?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Having a daughter who's trying to be a scientist, I tend to look for the sort of male-female ratio because she's very strong on this, you know, her future role as a scientist and so forth. So yeah, it's it didn't seem to be too bad. I don't know what she would have made of it, but seemed okay to me.
Well, it wasn't 50-50, but it did. Some of the projects, each of the projects seemed to have made a concerted effort to that they had developers who are professional developers working for the team, long history of working on the team, and they were there. There were also females among that group. What about the Tizen thing and the Enlightenment thing was quite interesting that they were working together, which is also nice.
Yes.
I really loved personally the Tizen Pavel's discussion about the automatic testing stuff that they developed, which is really cool. I'm looking forward to the Tizen phones being open, and by that I mean available, because the ones that have been released so far seem to be very locked down. So I would like to get my hands on one of their phones that seem to be like proper Linux devices.
Yeah. Just jumping on to the KDE stuff, I was most impressed. I know you mentioned this to me while we were there, actually, about the business of activities in KDE, which has always been a bit of a mystery, and it was sort of seemed to come a lot clear, become a lot clearer as a result of your interviews there as to what it was for.
Yeah, exactly. I'm and we got the breaking news. We got the the KDE what was it? Nuon, was it? The
Neon.
KDE Neon, yeah. That's right. KDE Neon was just launched. He said, "Hey, I just turned it on there right now." As we came up, so we had a breaking story here in HPR. And but it seems I'm very tempted. I was just telling you beforehand, I've installed it on a spare laptop here, and I'm trying to do a pure KDE type experience to get a feel for that. On my work laptop, not 100% sure I'm ready for that yet. But I'd like to see full-on KDE with all the desktop, you know, integration and the integration to the personal manager and the integration into keyrings and that sort of stuff, just to see how that works out.
Well, the impression I get from hearing about its development is that it's going to be fantastic. But my personal experience so far has not been that good. But I think it's probably because I'm running Debian testing, where a lot of broken bits are tending to appear. So
yeah, it's been I know from personal experience with Fedora, it's pretty broken as well. Even now, I'm 23. I just upgraded from 21 to 23, and a lot of stuff is broken. But anyway, that could be because an upgrade is not a recommended thing to do, so I'm on the fence as to whether I'll try a clean install and see how that goes. But anyway, I needed this machine to be running tonight. So, but I particularly enjoyed the Aaron Saigo interview. I was just after the interview, I was going, "Hold on, I know that name from somewhere." Hold on. And then realized it was who it was.
Yeah, that was great. So, comments? Do you want to do the comments?
Yeah, fire ahead.
We had a comment from Trent Palmer on this one. Awesome episode, he said. fantastic episode of Hacker Public Radio. I spent this afternoon driving around Southwest Washington in a liftgate tractor trailer making pickups and deliveries while listening to this collection of interviews from POSDEM, and I must report I'm entertained, inspired, and informed. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hacker Public Radio 1958 is an awesome podcast.
Well, now, Dave, as you know, I was tired and exhausted when I came back from FOSDEM, so much so that I had a tough week, and then I went into that and I came back for several more tough weeks. And when that was posted, I was, it just puts a smile on your face, some positive feedback like that.
That's what the comment system's for, those sorts of comments that just lift you so much.
Cool. Perfect.
Do you want to do Mike's?
No, I can't. I can't do.
You can't comment on your own. So Mike says, I second what Trent said and more. Thanks, Ken, for 3 or was it 4 shows containing a blistering array of interviews from FOSDEM. Sheer variety of subjects and projects covered was impressive. It must have been tiring, and I hope you didn't sacrifice your own enjoyment of the event to bring us the range of interviews you did. Highlights for me were mostly the last one, Pico, TCP, PTX, Dist, and Barebox Matrix, and the knitting lady, Siobhan, she had difficulty typing, as I would, was a delight and a good one to end on. I very much agree with that. I wish they were more like Siobhan at my local lug.
Indeed. Again, I didn't get to do a lot of those interviews, which I love doing, just random people interviews. The following day, K-Billing Level 2, Mozilla, Apache Jenkins, XWiki, DocuWiki, TikiWiki, and MediaWiki, LFS, Perl, Backhurst, Koala, Google, Summer of Code, Ultimaker.
Yep, that was a good one. As I was listening to the notes I made to myself, I enjoyed the wiki one. So I'm fascinated by wikis. And I enjoyed hearing things about them. I always want to go and look at more about them. They were all together on the same table, weren't they?
Yeah, except for the MediaWiki one, which was more a data wiki thing. They submitted the booth themselves as 3 projects, and FOSDEM are very much into that, project sharing and collaborating, so they gave them a table, which was awesome.
Yeah, I chatted to the MediaWiki girl who just happened to sit beside me at one point when I was having a rest. And she, it's quite an interesting chat with her. Didn't have a microphone with me, though.
Dave, how could you?
I'm not Ken. I can't do it. Go on.
Well, I just do that to get across my own shyness. You put a microphone in somebody's face, and suddenly you can ask all these interesting questions, and you're not Ken anymore. You're Ken Fallon, Hacker Public Radio representative. Yeah, that's kind of cool.
The Perl thing was fun.
Let me see the Mozilla one. I would have liked to go more into detail about a lot of the controversy, but again, that wasn't possible. It wasn't possible. Apache, I thought, was an interesting interview because you got the history of the Apache Foundation. I think they quietly chug away in the background and not getting the credit that they deserve. They get actually lambasted a little bit because of the open office thing, so that's not their fault. Somebody chooses a license and follows the procedures and goes into the thing. What can you do?
Yeah, right.
And then Jenkins, another good project, 3Wiki, DocuWiki. And I did enjoy the Linux from scratch, if for no other reason that, that was one of my first distros, one of the guys in work at one time. I asked him, what distro do you use? And he said, Linux from scratch. And then I proceeded to install that.
Yeah, well, that's very brave.
Brave at the time.
I've never really had the enthusiasm to do that, to be honest. I should, but haven't.
It does really make a lot of stuff very clear to you in a way that people say, if you do a source-based distro
Gentoo or something?
That's the bunny, Gentoo. I was thinking about their eMERGE system. this really goes down to GCC, your GCC compiling your distro. You are writing the distro. It's actually very awesome. And he was a blind user, so he had a nice, or not a nice, but he had a braille reader and stuff on his desk. So ideal there. Does everything in Emacs, as far as I can remember. And then we have Perl again, Wendy and Cole.
Yeah, I know. I always like to go and hang out there if I possibly can, and they're so friendly over there. It's always very nice.
They are indeed. They are indeed. The Baghurst have got their website up, so that's at baghurst.org. What is Baghurst? It's like completely and totally unprepared. I had no idea, no logo, no nothing for them.
No, it's quite. I found myself a little bit stunned by what they were saying.
Yes, and then we had the Koala language analysis tool, so which was kind of interesting, and of course Google Summer of Code, and my favorite place to work in the whole world, it'll be Ultimaker. This is my background is mechanical plastic engineering.
Yes, it was very cool. They had a sort of several stacks of these machines, which they built devices to allow them to stand one on the other, I guess.
Yeah, it's like the shiny 3D printers and shiny LEDs, you know, guaranteed to make any geek.
Well, it was just sort of. It was gobsmacking. It really was watching all these devices stacked in a stack, all merrily building things. It's just, it's going to tear my eyes away from it.
Yeah, and there was like just a pile of people in front the whole time working, looking at it. So excellent. Mike Ray commented, liked the interview, especially the LFS guy. Didn't quite grasp whether he himself is visually impaired, but he spoke very... Oh, yes, he was. He was blind and was using a braille reader. And, nice guys, all of them.
Indeed.
So, next day, FreeBSD, Matrix, Braindrino, Butterknife, KY Hardy, Core Boot, Open Embedded, Pico CCP, and PTX. Dist, Java Card Pro, Knitting, and of course, Fenster. And that was the FreeBSD interview was with Ed. We met him on the bus. We all got lost at the same spot. Through no fault of my own, I might add.
No, this was a new phenomenon of a tram that comes towards you with a certain number on, and when you get on it, it changes the number and goes in a
completely wrong direction. Yes.
Which it's a Belgian thing that I've never encountered before.
Yeah, we will know to ask. We always seem to have like strange public transport adventures in Belgium, but I don't know. Anyway, then we had Oddvars with Matrix, which is a cool basically standard. We were looking at that in work as well, just to do teamwork. Braindrino, which is awesome, excellent stuff. Did you see that even?
I didn't actually check that one out. A lot of these places were so busy.
Yeah, and I went these work guys were mobbed. They were absolutely mobbed the whole time as well.
Yeah, I think FOSDEM was. There were more people. This year than there had been in previous years, to my experience. That's what the reports say coming back. So everywhere was so packed that I wanted to go to. I went to the Perl room and just sort of occupied a seat there for as long as I possibly could.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm here. No, you can't get me out.
I've been looking at the videos actually as well. So that's because I completely missed every part of the show except these ones. Then we had Butterknife, and I can't help but think that I heard of a project that does exactly this thing, like a clone of Ghost. But I cannot find it.
No, I don't know anything about that, I'm afraid.
That was a way of blasting machines out, just cloning them and putting Ubuntu on them and updating them. It was pretty cool. And then the PyHurdy was like a hurdy-gurdy project, a musical instrument made out of clear plastic with
I'm quite interested in musical instruments of various sorts, and I did follow up all the links on this one. It's some amazing work there.
It's brilliant. Yeah,
I didn't actually go and visit that one myself, I'm afraid to say, but so thanks for that.
And unfortunately there was no I can't get a recording of it because couldn't trace down a recording.
I couldn't find one either.
And we were we caught up with Carl Daniel Halfinger from Core Boot and Flashrom, and I was so annoyed because during their booth they have a you can bring over a laptop, and they'll install Core Boot on it. And I've got a Chromebook here that is more or less bricked, and they will recover it for you. So I was going. I just couldn't believe it. I was trying to catch up with him all day, and remember we were walking over to the K building. Oh no, it wasn't with you. I was with JWP. I bumped into Carl, and he. I've been trying since then to get an interview with him, and I was thinking, oh, there's only going to be a few things, but they're really in the last year. It's been really taken on as the bootloader. For a lot of projects and a lot of devices.
Yeah, it's quite impressive. I was impressed with it last year, but as you say, it seems to have developed a lot. It's highly desirable, isn't it?
Very much so. And we had the Open Embedded, and we had Pico TCP. Those guys pushing the TCP layer. Last year I was a bit concerned about their dual licensing, but I think they're really clarified that for me this year. Then we had PTX Dist and Bearbox by Alexander Ehring. I must say this really went over my head. This whole the whole interview here with bootloaders and stuff. I'm not that. I really was asking some fairly basic questions here. It wasn't my thing. But really cool.
No, I can't add anything there, I'm afraid. It's not really my thing either.
The JavaCard Pro was excellent. They as an authentication method, and as on his business card, you know, when people give you business cards, he gave me one of these Java cards that I put in my computer and read it, and he has his own. He's got a business card and stuff written on the application in the card itself. It's just pretty cool. And then we had, at the last, I happened to be outside the, just packing up, and I was talking to Siobhan about knitting and stuff. And then, of course, as required, we need to give credit to Fenster for the interstation music that has now become part and parcel of FOSDEM for me, at least.
Very good, yes.
I now moving on, I promised it would be a fast episode, but I lied through my teeth, Dave, sorry.
That's okay. It's hard not to talk about these things.
It is, but there are so many fantastic projects. And again, when I came home, I was so tired and depressed. Just wrecked. God, will I ever go back there again? And then you read through the interviews and you listen to them, because even when I'm doing them, you're thinking of the next question and you're just scanning for words and making sure that, you know, we're getting everything in. And when you can listen to them and you hear about those projects and you go to the website and you go, oh, wow, this is a lot cooler than I thought at the time.
Absolutely, yeah. I found lots of things listening to your various interviews that I hadn't really picked up on myself by sort of craning over other people's shoulders. And you know, it made me want to go and check out a lot of these things. Definitely on my to-do list.
Yeah, and that combined with getting a lot of, you know, watching the videos, which is cool that all the videos are available online. I think you can, you're actually better off, because Kai came with us and got sick and had to go home. So he ended up listening to our interviews and watching the videos from the halls. So that's how he experienced FOSDEM when he got home.
Oh, very cool. I'm glad he got to see stuff. I haven't picked up on the videos yet. I know they were in process, but I've not gone to see if they're all done yet. So
it's kind of interesting. Again, you know, you're if people are listening to the you go to particular booths because you're interested in the particular booths, and the cool thing about the reason why I went to every booth is because I mightn't be particularly interested in it, but somebody else might be, you know. So that's why I wanted to do as many as possible. But I don't know where I'm going with this.
No, it's good to be able to sort of pass these messages on to the listeners, because even if you're actually there, it's not easy to see everything, and well, it's impossible to see everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Visiting the booth, so it's a very
and if you are visiting, yeah, actually, that's what I meant. Thanks, Dave, you reminded me. If you're visiting there as a person without a microphone, you don't want to monopolize people's time because of so many other people. But if you're there with a microphone, you can ask all the questions to make sure you've covered everything and they got the story, because we've got these 16,000 listeners who are, you know. It's you're now talking to 16,000 people as opposed to just one person. And I found that when I was listening, especially at the AW building, there were people following me around as I was recording so that they could hear all the questions and hear the interview live, which is kind of cool.
Wow.
Well, you know, you're going to go up to a guy and you go, what's this about? And then, you know, somebody else comes and they're talking and you're trying to listen to it. But you got this big arrogant Irish guy who comes in and goes, right, I'm going to interview now, and blah, give me the whole spiel.
Yeah, I can see that. You should hand out microphones to these guys and get them to
give out backups. Business cards, so if they're listening to this, you would be nice if you sent in a show telling us about your experience of FOSDEM. Anyway, another from one epic series to another epic series, the HPR New Year's show.
Well, yes. What can you say? There was a hell of a lot went on there, wasn't it?
It was, but I really love it because it's this year. There was no pressure because we just released it whenever, so not recording the shows. And people come on, they chatted, and they left. Excellent. What it should be.
Yeah, that worked out very well, I think.
So the first one was Education, Podcast, Trains and Bikes. And a few links there into the recumbent bike episode and the model trains. Open Tech podcast. Yeah. I wasn't aware of that, actually.
Some quite good links there, actually. I'd not looked at that in a huge amount of detail. Handsome Pirate and his model trains is very impressive, I thought.
Yes, indeed. More shows than those of interest to hackers. The second one, 1962 distros, wearables, distros, RIP Ian Murdoch, Chromebooks, Samsung, World War One, Libre Planet, TTS, and more. Talk on Linux distributions, wearable computers, ctile.org. What was that? A fully featureable hackable tiling manager written in Python. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Ian Murdoch passing away. Don't think we need to add any more fuel to that particular fire. Older Fedora image gun for the Samsung ARM Chromebooks. Samsung makes tanks. Did not know that. Detailed talk about World War One shipboard communications, of which I knew little and which I found very interesting myself.
Yes, indeed. This is Handsome Pirate again, who's makes a particular study of this, I think.
And that would fall definitely under the heading of interest to hackers, me and yourself, and Handsome Pirate. That makes three. One over the quota.
Absolutely.
The current state of text-to-speech, travel, Linux and open source conference, what crowdfunded devices did we back? That's actually a very good question. That would be a good one for just generally, you know, what crowdfunded devices you would like to see. And then we had hacking media devices, comics-based TV shows and Star Wars without the spoilers. The next day we had Dyson Sphere, Star Wars again, Spammers, Tizen, Kevi, TV, Security, Single Board PCs in general. Game of Thrones is the Game of Thrones a Dyson Sphere.
That's the weirdest thing I've ever heard in my life. It's just the sort of opening graphics that set off this rumor, isn't it?
I have no idea even what a Dyson Sphere is.
Oh, that's a science fiction concept where a very, very advanced civilization builds a sphere around their solar system in order to trap all of the energy from the sun, from the main star. And there's been some talk of some astronomical anomaly recently that could possibly be a Dyson sphere or one in the building.
Very nice.
But I don't know. I've not watched a Game of Thrones, so I don't know anything about this.
More Star Wars. Punking tech support spammers. That was quite funny.
That was good. Yes, I like that.
I actually listened to that guy that they were talking about. They have like an old Australian chap, and he goes, "You know, my daughter, she normally takes care of this sort of thing. The what are you calling about again?"
Oh, lovely. Yes. Yes.
Awesome. Microsoft failed Tizen phone, which was interesting because they asked questions that were covered in the interviews that had just happened, because I had interviewed the Tizen guys, which is nice. Fancy TVs, security single board PCs, more Ian Murdoch and Linux distros. Then we had cheap computers the following day, ARM, Audio Book Club, Lights, Living, Orlando, Etching, Pronunciation, and Pranks. Can you buy a cheap new computer that runs Linux? The answer is no. This was a fascinating discussion, made more so by having Pokey back on. I really missed hearing him and the debate he had with... Joe. And I was screaming at Joe. Joe was talking BS, but then again, it was 2 o'clock, and it was 6 o'clock in the morning, and he had drank a lot. So, there we go.
I thought he did a fantastic job, actually, Joe. He held up his end of the argument very well, and he was doing it quite deliberately to cause there to be, you know, a heated discussion, I think, wasn't it?
There was, but I really liked Pokey comes back with valid points, and I was thinking, shouting into the microphone, Pokey was asking the question and making the point. But Joe, of course, is good at, you know, that's why he was on the podcast panel, because he's good at stirring up the pond water, let's put it like that.
Oh, yeah. All power to Joe with.
Although I do have to say now, officially on the record, convergent devices is ridiculous. It will never, ever, 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 ever work. Joe's point about there being your phone being your only computing device is ridiculous. If you go into any computer, any office building in the world, there are computers on the desks that may be laptops, but they are on the desks. And if you're running a job, I don't care if you're editing a movie or you're processing in an Excel spreadsheet, or you're logged in via SSH into 20 sessions. When you go to the toilet, you want to check the news feeds, and you're not going to disconnect your phone, which is now is the device that's churning the spreadsheet that's connected into these SSH sessions or is rendering a video, and suddenly all your work is following you into the John and falls down the toilet, and you have to go into your boss and explain why you've just lost 4 days' work because your phone fell down the toilet. Convergent devices is never going to happen. It's a thing that Sony Ericsson was on about 5-10 years ago. Forget about it. It's ridiculous. It'll never happen.
It's snow crash. It's the fault of Snow Crash, isn't it? Have you ever read Snow Crash, the sci-fi?
Yeah.
That's what all the cool guys have. They have a unified device that they, you know, carry in their pockets, and then it's got infinite amounts of power and stuff. It's,
yeah, it's that's, that. That's correct. They have that. That's fine. No problem. But when you go into the John, you don't want your SSH connections, your work stuff following you in, right? So picture this, right? You have your phone connected. You've got all your Skype contacts, you know, people talking to you on work. You've got your email following you in. You're sitting there, and in the cubicle next to you, the phone rings. You know, doo-doo-doo-doo, Skype phone, and the guy answers the phone. Yeah, do you really want that? Socially, we are not ready for that.
I don't want it at all. No. But it's gonna. This is the vision, isn't it?
I did hear a guy join a conference call in the toilet this year. That happened.
Great. Yeah. Oh, God, I'm sure the background noises were wonderful.
Well, I made my efforts to contribute. That's all I can say. Anyway, cheap new computers, ARM, pranks, naval warfare, or audiobook club, some avatars, Linux phone conference, Christmas display lights. Oh yeah, we need more of that stuff. Southern living and booze, visiting Orlando, fun with etching, pronunciation of towns' names, pranks, naval warfare, which was another rehash of that. Strange Steam badges, scanning photos of kids' art. That was me. And happy 2016.
Cool.
Oh, God, more Ken Fallon. I don't do a show. I get all my shows in January, so nobody can complain that I haven't done a show. All right, yes. I was telling you about this. Did you even... It was adding SQLite as a data source to SQLeo. And this is the... it's like a graphical tool for working with the SQL databases. So you can do drag and drop queries. So this table into that table, into the next table, and, you know, doing unified joins and that sort of thing. I wasn't using it for that. But did you finally understand what I was asking?
When you first mentioned this, did we speak about it or we
communicated?
I didn't get it. I didn't know what the hell you were doing here. But when I listened to your episode, I did. But and it looked very cool. I thought it was really good. The SQLeo thing, which is a sort of a schema display and edit thing, I take it.
Yeah.
No pictures. I needed pictures. I wanted to see what it looked like.
Step by step instructions.
Yeah. Just winding you up.
I'm doing your trick for your full step-by-step instructions. See here, and EPS HPR 1965, very last line. Seriously, tell me you're winding me up.
Was there pictures? Was there pictures there?
There's a full transcript with pictures.
Not pictures of what the actual... Yes. Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah. Okay. So when I was writing my notes, I was obviously high on something. So
yeah. Oh, Dave. I take it back.
No, the notes are great. The notes are beautiful.
Well, again, this is one of the things for myself later on. But this guy is cool. You know, I paid 10 euros and I've got about 6 different releases since then. So pretty cool.
Yeah, it looks... I'd like to play around with that. It looks like fun.
Swift 110 had a what's in my bag. And his bag is extremely heavy. He will have to be careful with his bag. I'll tell you that for nothing. Sony Vaio, a Lenovo, an iPad 3, Galaxy Tab 3, Android phone or cables, charging cables, iPod Classic, USB drives. A lot of interesting stuff there. Another guy I think I'll mug someday as he walks down the street.
yeah, that's good. Pictures would have been nice, but that's just me.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But not everybody's as fascinated by show notes as you and I, Dave, unfortunately.
True.
Nacho Jordi, how I saw the Linux light at the end of the Windows tunnel, and this was a new user coming to Linux.
I thought it was very nicely done. He apologized about the ambient sounds. I thought it was great.
I added to it.
Yeah, I like that. So long as the audio,
yeah, sometimes it can be too much. And also stop complaining about your accents. Especially people from south of the US complaining about their accents. Don't. It's having knowledgeable people come on explaining stuff to us with different accents is awesome. It's absolutely cool. Breaks down stereotypes as well. So keep them coming.
Absolutely. I made a note that he mentioned the Sinclair Spectrum, which sounded like pretty good fun. So I'd like to hear more about that.
So would I. I never had, never did have one. I know a few people had one at the time. And of course, I wouldn't have had enough money to get my hands on one of those. So there you go.
I had a BBC Micro, so at that time.
I got my hands on one of them in college. There was only two left by the time so I ended up having to do it with my hardware stuff that is on the GPIO port that a Raspberry Pi would have done absolutely perfect for, but alas, that was a long, long time ago. Anyway, first show by John Doe, was it? Was it the first show?
Yeah.
And he did a show on multiplexing wrapper, the Bayoubu, which is, I've used once way back when it came out, and it absolutely borked my entire screen session to the point of having to remove all the config files and reinstall it. I'm sure it's come on along since then. It actually made me tempted to use it, but I'm finger muscled into the hotkeys and screen now, I think.
Yeah, Bayoubu, I don't know how to say it either. I have used it. I don't use it regularly, but I do. Okay, I have got it set up on one of my Raspberry Pis, and it's quite useful for doing that type of thing. And so it was good to hear about. But as you say, it's depends which one you're used to. It's like buy an Emacs type of argument, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly. Still might be useful to give it a go sometime. This made me seriously think about it again. Maybe I'll do it on this clean KDE Neon machine I have here. And Josh Knapp, doing a show on the horrors of spam. I think this one was dedicated squarely at you and I, Dave, if nothing else.
I rather felt it might be, yeah.
And I think, I think he's quite right. We've had Josh has put in a lot of effort on tidying up the spam thing. And I think it's sorted now, Dave, don't you?
It looks like it is, yeah. It has been pretty horrible. I do sympathise with Josh's point of view with this, because it's a difficult position to be in, being a hosting provider and stuff. So
I'm surprised actually how low the amount of spam he gets is, because I remember working at an ISP and 98% of email messages we were getting at the time was spam.
Having worked at a university, spam was total bane of our existence for many, many years.
Yeah, and especially with the draconian measures that people are taking about blacklisting IP addresses. You know, you're as an ISP provider, if your range gets blacklisted like that, then that's it. You're out of business. You know, which is basically the shortened summary of that is if any email goes out and it goes out at all from that IP address and you get on one of those blacklists, you're never coming off it.
It used to be that it was very easy in mail clients to submit what you thought was spam to one of those blacklists.
Yeah, yeah. Blackhouse or suffer with like that.
Yeah. We used to suffer with that at the university with students saying, oh, I don't want to read that. That's spam, bam. And then you'd find that some external organization or your organization itself or whatever had been blacklisted, and then you had a hell of a job trying to get it unblocked.
Yeah, I remember one time the entire ISP got blacklisted, and then they had to block for every customer port 25 going out, so that you had to use a proxy to get out. It was the only way we could solve the problem. But anyway, yes, more power to and again, plug to anhonesthost.com, who basically sponsor all the hosting and the bandwidth and everything else to do with HPR. And as soon as Josh goes on vacation, you're guaranteed that we will be bugging him for stuff.
Yes, he's very long suffering, isn't he? He's a pretty good guy.
He's a good guy, all right. Anyway, the following day, how I got started with Linux by Swift 110, who's quite often again on the IRC channel. And very positive story about getting into Linux, basically as a cost thing, and seeing all this software that's available for free and gratis and stuff. Very, very inspiring, I thought, actually. And similar to my own journey in many ways.
Yeah, indeed. No, it's good. It's these stories are always great, and this was a good one.
Okay, the following day, BlinkStick led me to spend 4 hours on certain websites.
Oops.
Yes. And I ended up ordering 70 euros of stuff from Conrad just as a result of going through this, through this, through this. But I've decided finally, Dave, thank you very much, that we don't have any under lights in the kitchen.
You know, right.
Renovated the kitchen last year, and under worktop surface lights. I was going to get LEDs from IKEA, then I was tinkering with going to the Adafruit to get their lights, because they're, you know, they're more professional and they last twice as long as the IKEA ones. But with this, the BlinkStick Pro, you can link it in directly into the IKEA light.
Yes, you can. Yes,
and for 20 euros, I can test my programs, because Dave, it's very important that the lights always work, Dave. It might be cool that they do disco blinking, but the lights have to work when certain members of my family come down and turn that switch. So, which is why I was thinking of using the BlinkStick to control the red, green, and blue, or the RGB ones. And on the Adafruit is selling a four LED light with a natural white one, which I'm thinking of controlling independently on a light switch. What do you think of that, Dave?
I think it needs a show there again.
I think so, Dave. And not only that, I have no idea how to do it. So if there's anyone who, say, I don't know, might have automated their chicken coop lately, wants to give me a hand with that, I would be more than happy to send them a BlinkStick to see if we can get this thing working. Because that would be cool. A light switch, Dave, or a dimmer for the white one, and the other ones then controlled by a Arduino or a Raspberry Pi. That would be awesome.
Oh yes.
Well, because it's cool, you can daisy chain these things up, so you could have three individual ones. So it's pretty awesome.
You can do some fun things. The range of stuff at the BlinkStick site has grown enormously since I first bought one, and I'm really tempted to get some more stuff, I have to say.
And I also think it's a very nice small little project for it introduces you to capacitors, resistors, and diodes.
This is my story, that we bought it, so do some soldering practice, and it's good. Edinburgh Science Festival's coming up at the end of this month, and they're doing soldering lessons there, and they're also teaching you how to do surface mount soldering, which to sign up for. Yeah, you should be able to do it on your kitchen table, they'd say. So
how are they going to do that? Yeah, can you bring your Zoom and just turn it on and leave it in the middle?
Well, I should maybe go and pay for a course and say, can I bring this along as well?
Anyway, the BlinkStick, by the way, for those of you who didn't hear the show and go off on a tangent, is a small USB device with RGB lights that you can build yourself, and you plug it in. It basically is a USB stick with a light on it, and you say, how interesting is that? Well, Mr. Dave Morris is scanning the HPR website, and whenever the show comes in, he can bug me about it because his goal is flashing red. So many ways you could use this, like in work, if you know, I don't know, if the second. If you get more emails coming in, or write a script to check if the server's down or something, you know, it's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, like I said, my next project is going to use the Pro with a NeoPixel ring, which I'm going to mount in something or other. And, yeah, so I want to light up different lights depending on events. The postman's at the door. Flash that one red. Yay.
Ken hasn't replied to my email in the last 5 minutes.
Oh, definitely that one. Yeah, yeah. And Sandy Claxon as well, that one.
Very good, very good, very good. Following day, 1972, How I Got Into Linux. My first podcast, me rambling about how I got into the Linux, which is from Mershades, let's speak. And there was nothing wrong with the rough sound. I am fascinated, though, with why he used an old Sony tape recorder to record it. Don't get me wrong, I'm pretty impressed. And also, his Kentucky accent is awesome. Have we gone into... No, we haven't. This is still February. So, yes, loved the accent, loved the Sony tape recorder sounds.
Yeah, it's. I was very impressed with that. Reusing old technology for these sorts of things, it's pretty good. And accents are cool, you know, if you need more accents. Yeah, it was a good show. I enjoyed that.
Turtle replied, nice show, enjoyed your show. For your information, Icepack Linux had a release in 2015 based on kernel 3.10.66. To which Mirror Shades replied, thanks for the kind words and the heads up on Icepack. No idea that they had made a comeback, which is excellent. I had never heard of Icepack until that show.
No, I hadn't either.
I don't think we've had one where it's been a duplicate of anyone's journey. Well, there've been similarities and in all of them, but none that have been, oh, that's the same as some other dudes.
I like the fact that he was went back a little bit further than many people in sort of computer history, there was some interesting stuff there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So the next day, 1973, I had a problem with this. I have 1 hour and 15 minutes of audio, but only 45 minutes came through the playout. And I've tried everything to get it back. So I will be sending an email at Dave, can you please remind me, to the list with a link to the source audio if somebody can help me fix it.
Right. I'm just writing that down.
And then I'll repost this and the full version will come down. So apologies about that. I think what happened was when I uploaded it over the hotel Wi-Fi, which was crap, that it's something went wrong. And normally I tried all the things. I even tried sending it off to the audio fixie people. Can't remember what they're called. And they weren't able to do anything with it either. I was able to, if I fast forward to past that point, I am able to play it. And I tried then playing it in MPlayer and looping it back through the Pulse Audio. But that didn't work, so I have yet to try taking the audio and splitting it up into two. So I don't know.
Okay.
It was at the end of my tether and I'd all go with other stuff down, so I haven't had a chance to fix it. So I thought, anyway, it's too late now, we'd have to repost it. So better to wait to the community news, see if somebody can fix it. And then at least people listening, when they hear the show coming down again, they will realize, hey, fast forward to 45 seconds in, or 45 minutes in, and then listen to the remainder of the show, because it was a good show.
Yeah, the recording level was great, actually. I was surprised that it came out as well as it did, and it was an interesting lecture.
He has done that lecture before, so if you go to the GNU website, /media, I think you'll get a shorter version from a YouTube, a TED talk or TEDx talk. But then you miss the Saint Augustus part at the end, which everybody here missed as well. But anyway,
Saint Ignatius.
Thank you, Dave.
I was very impressed. That's what I remembered.
JWP did 1974 and sent it through the upload. I was feeling bad about how donations worked in Ubuntu, and he had basically given us feelings about how the various different projects get supported. Interesting summary, synopsis there. JWP does quite a good job at taking stuff and making a synopsis of it.
Yeah. He voiced his concerns when we were at POSDEM, so it's good to hear him doing a show about it.
Yeah, and I think he had done some research then afterwards and gone and looked at the Fedora booth and their way of handling it, and had gone round to the other projects as well, the Debian and Mint and stuff. So, good show. Don't be afraid, people, to send in your own opinions and things. And then we had an interview with an Android app developer, which Sigflup, I think, was surprised to find somebody to talk to on Christmas Eve about Linux and open source. And yes, awesome, guys, there is no excuse. You can bring recorders. You find an interesting person, you press record. This is how you do it. Sigflup, take a bow.
That was great. Yeah. It was a good thing to do. And the fact that it obviously was at Christmas and everybody was rushing about getting ready for Christmas and all whatever, that's quite nice.
It's like a John Colpe type episode, you know, where you just grabbed a coffee. In this case, I was drinking in my mind a nice beer, sitting at the table, listening to them talk. And, you know, as they were talking about the phones and passing them over, and, you know, you could just imagine yourself, you know, feeling the, you know, I've got these three phones and this is what I do and that's what I do. And awesome. I guarantee you that was more interesting than than being in with certain other in-law families. So well done to...
it was an awesome thing to do.
Oh, I'm going to have to edit that out. Kai, how was it about you, Kai? No.
Yes, no comment.
Indeed. And the last one, I think. Is it the last one? 29th?
Yes, indeed.
29th? You were... Introduction to SED, Dave, one that I've requested many, many times. And it was excellent. Thank you very much. I picked up a few things. Mostly that you used my bad grammar as examples. You're such a horrible, horrible man. You couldn't tell me that they were fixed. I could fix this, you know, if you told me. I did. I have a bug open. That's...
Hello, nothing personal, Ken. You know, it's just
looking for...
I thought you might get the joke.
Hilarious. No, it's fine. I do need to fix that then. I didn't know about the and stuff. That was very useful.
Yeah, there's nothing quite like the process of having to explain a thing to people.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
Teach you how the hell to use it, because I had sort of vaguely known about this in other contexts. I think it's the same in Vim and various others. It's not an uncommon thing, but I had never used this in SED. I've hardly used SED to this degree in real life. So, you know, hopefully people will get something out of the fact that I've dug around and revealed these strange corners.
Yes, but also I hope people realize the amount of work that you put into this, because I know from myself in preparing for the XML episodes that I'm planning on doing, possibly, maybe not ever, that you really need to know your stuff before you start doing an episode on it, and it's a lot of work. Even your show notes are excellently awesome.
I quite enjoyed doing this. When I was working at Lancaster University back in the 70s, I did an evening class for about 5 years. I used to run an evening class in Pascal, I actually wrote a book to go along. It was never published, but it was a book that all of the students got. It was printed on line printer paper and tied up with a piece of piece of magnetic tape just for a bit of a laugh. And so I had enormous fun doing that. So I'm sort of going over the same type of ground again to amuse myself.
Do you still have that, or is it copyrighted?
I think the book's still about. It's I've got a line printer, a faded line printer copy somewhere in the house. You I don't think I have the don't have the source anymore though.
I should try scanning it or something. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I wrote the. It was in the days of text processors, like Markdown and stuff like that. So I invented my own text language and wrote a Pascal program to generate the printout as well. So
that Pascal was my first language in college as well.
It's got a lot going for it. It had a lot going for it.
It's been ages since I used it. Yeah,
I couldn't do anything in it now. But my students enjoyed it.
That's, by the way, that open bracket parentheses square bracket tilde open bracket close square bracket asterisk close square bracket thing. I have seen that so many times, and not figured out what it was. That it was just a revelation to me that. I know you say it in the show that you hear, it's the most common example, and it is. For some reason, people seem to love replacing stuff between brackets with other stuff between brackets.
Yes, I know. I'm just nervous about reading out complex examples like this, because it must come across pretty tedious if you're sitting in your car or something in a traffic jam, listen to some guy wittering on about slashes and backslashes and stuff.
Happens, I today had to listen to two shows, that Cyclops and yours, and I didn't listen to yours because I knew there would be examples, so I listened to it coming back in the train and just read along.
That's probably the best way to do it, didn't need to be read for if you're visually impaired or whatever, maybe it's usable to you there. I don't know.
Mike would probably be the best to comment, and no doubt he will. Cool. That was it for shows anyway.
That's right. Yep. Do you want to do the comments that we haven't covered in as we went through the shows?
Yeah, yes, please. Fire ahead.
Okay, so there are only a few this time. We had a comment to show 1896 by which was Eric Duhamel talking about user local software. And this was Boklodoa? I don't know. I have a directory for this purpose too. The name has changed several times. Currently is Code From Beyond My Repo. It is too long. Maybe it will change to Code FB or something like that. I totally agree with the need for some directories which are not touched by the system but only by the users. I don't like .files.d very much because it feels too generic for me. Then we had 1919 by Zoek, which was a DerbyCon interview with Paul Koblitz.
Yes, and there was talk of a 3D template in there, and I think Zoek sent that in, but I cannot find it. So need to contact Zoek again to ask him to see if he can send that to me.
Yes, it was Otto Localhorst, which is a great name, wanted a template of a Lloyd. A Lloyd being, I discovered, a equivalent of a sort of credit card for poking into locks and things, yeah.
Very nice. Then on your never-ending attempt to get people to submit shows to your fountain pen thing so it can become a series.
Hasn't worked yet, damn.
I imagine people are working on it, Dave. Do you know what? The other day, I was in a supermarket in Germany, and they had a wide selection of cheap fountain pens, Dave. And I was so close, Dave. Very, very close to buying one.
You will,
and
you
then
will fall.
Just to spite you, I didn't.
I can imagine that, yes.
Because then if I had a fountain pen, I would be feeling to myself, I need to do a show about fountain pens, and then that would make it a series, and that would be playing into Dave Morris's plan.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Well, NY Bill found an old pen and mentioned it.
It was interesting how you recover it. He basically was cleaning the thing out. And then,
he pointed to his pictures of him leaving it to soak in warm water and things, which is the right thing to do, actually. So
yeah, good, good. And you gave some tips about cleaning it out with a soft toothbrush, removing the nib, if it is removable. I particularly like. At least another HPR show here. Can you recount your experiences? Nice one, Dave.
Well, you know, it's...
You so want this to be a series, Dave, don't you?
Not at all. No, I'm not bothered one bit.
Me? Not me. Jonathan was coming, Jonathan Colt, that is. Pilot, Metro, and Schaffer, Dave, say it. Schaffer.
No, it's not the way it's spelled, though.
Yeah, probably not. Anyway, Dave Bill, I recently got a Pilot Metro pen as well. It's very nice. Also, Trumpet Guy gave me an old S-C-H-E-A-F-F-E-R, Schaffer.
Schaffer. Schaffer is the usual pronunciation.
Well, it's wrong, Dave. You're wrong. And anybody who wants to record a show proving that I'm wrong may do so. Ink flows a little faster with the Schaffer than it does with a Pilot. I can't decide whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. In my new position at work, I have to sign a lot of documents wherein whenever they're not in triplicate, which requires a ballpoint pen to put enough pressure in, I use one of my new fountain pens. Had to see what all the fuss was about. After these episodes prompted me to comment more comments than I can remember. Yes, that's because somebody's prompting these comments in an effort to make that a series. Although now I do have lots of images of John Culp over the series of episodes that he's done in Lafayette, Louisiana. And I know that whenever I do eventually get around to visiting him, I will his image of my image of him will be completely different to the reality.
It's always the way, though, isn't it?
I picture him now with a cigar and signing this. Get out of my office!
I like that, yes.
Anyway, you commented?
I said that name is hard to spell, meaning Schaffer. It looks as if it's German, so I tend to type S-C-H-A-E-F-F-E-R a lot of the time. It's an American company from around 1912, however.
Hence the pronunciation.
So that's why they spell it that way, I assume. I used a Schaffer cartridge pen as a schoolboy, and I still have it, and I'm just in the process of resurrecting it. And I did, actually. It works fine. There are various opinions about wet pens, i.e. ones that produce a lot of ink. Heard them described as juicy, too. A broad nib needs plenty of ink to be delivered because it deposits more. Finer nibs, conversely, need less. However, much lower quality paper doesn't suit wetter pens as the ink tends to sink in and feather or bleed through. Mm. On the other hand, a drier pen can be frustrating as the ink feed often doesn't keep up with the writing. Many factors to consider.
God, just get a biro like everybody else, why don't you?
Here's a pencil, man. Slate and a nail, will do.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm glad you're enjoying the Metro. I'd love to see the Schaffer. We need a show on your experiences.
Do it now.
Another aspect of fountain pen usage you might enjoy is the huge selection of inks that is available. I'm enjoying one called Ancient Copper from Diamine at the moment, a sort of reddish brown. So there you go. There's a show there, eh?
Indeed, yeah. And never letting a show related to pens die. You also commented on episode number 1954. Grandpa shows us how to turn custom pens. And your comment was, great to hear that you have officially joined the League of Fountain Pen Wielders. You should get yourself a fountain pen friendly writing paper. Some from who?
Rhodia or Claire Fontaine, perhaps. Then have a go at writing stuff, notes, letters, poetry, whatever. It can be a pleasure and very relaxing.
And you can also do a show about it.
Yeah, I do sound like a...
Yeah. You sound like me, Dave. I've turned you into me. Oh, no! Okay, so where are we? Fostem, send in your questions. They did. Request PHP given a 500 error. That turned out to be a... upgrade. PHP.ini. Josh upgraded the back end, as all good system administrators should. And the PHP.ini got overwritten, and our strange requirements of having massive big limits on the size of files got turned back to something sane, which for us is insane. HPR in the press, I sent out ages ago, and it was held up in the thing, and then I eventually copped on to how to use the control panel that Josh had set up, and I released it. And this is just if you do come across stuff where HPR is mentioned in the press or on the internet somewhere in a review, good, bad, or indifferent, I really don't care. We put it up because it's nice to know that it's not only the people who spent the time writing the review, but also that we get we put it onto our about page so that people know we exist.
Cool.
Then David L. Winston had the speech synthesis during the intro, asking how that was done. I pointed him to the exact line in the script that does it. And if anybody wants to improve that in any way at all, feel free to do so. That's on the GitLab. So gitlab.anonesthost.com. And you can sign up there, username, password, yada, 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 make the changes and do whatever you want to do, and then we'll add it or fix it. And the last one, do you want to do? Sigflup?
Yeah, this, excuse me, this was Sigflup saying she made a mistake in the title of her show, 1975. And this elicited interesting responses. Jason Dodd came back saying, "Rose by any other name would still sound as sweet." He slightly misquoted that one there, didn't he? But anyway. To which Windigo said, not if you call them stench blossoms.
Quoting Bart Simpson.
Yes. So that was fun.
Okay, that's it, Dave. We're done. Let's go. Anything else coming up that we need to know about?
I don't think there's anything. Is there anything else? No, I haven't got anything else to add. That's me.
Post shows, folks. Post shows, and we would like shows to be posted. And if the current 2 weeks are full, post them out in the upcoming weeks. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Alrighty, that's it. That's all, folks. Da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. Join us now!
Sure. No, no. I thought we were having song-free episode.
Right. Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of
Hacker
Public
Radio.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the binary revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.